Hi, I'm Kieran, I'm an addict.
Hi, Kieran.
Thank you very much for the meeting tonight, and thank you very much for giving me a chance to be of service. If I told you that I wasn't nervous, it was an understatement. Gosh, my heart's pounding very, very hard, and the addict in me really doesn't want me to be sitting up here. The addict in me wants me to be out there in the madness, or in jail, or in an institution, or dead. But today I have a choice. I have a choice to be here. I have a choice to be part of this amazing fellowship. It's taken me a very, very long time to get to this place where I can be okay with who I am and be okay with, being part of this fellowship, really being part of this fellowship. Every little part of me has always resisted being part of this fellowship, from as long as I can remember. I was at a meeting at lunchtime today, and it was a Just for Today reading meeting. It was about self-acceptance. And it's amazing how apt that is, because, my God, that's right at the core of my disease, for so long, and, today, coming to terms with who I am and being okay with who I am is an absolute battle. I want to be everything but myself. I want to be better at what I do in absolutely everything. I'm just continually sort of at dis-ease about who I am and the way I act and operate. And it's driven me absolutely crazy. It's driven me to my knees on numerous occasions. I suppose I'll start by telling a little bit about myself and my journey, my experience to date. Like most of you, I came into contact with drugs and alcohol quite early on, about 13, 14, and like most of us, my disease progressed slowly but surely over the years, different substances. And every time the substance got stronger, and every time I promised that I'd never do that one, I'd never try that one, and I ended up doing it. And I had a fairly sort of up and down upbringing, I went to school, I finished school, I went to study. There were lots of really good ethics in our family, and I was sort of working from an early age, and was always quite sort of self-sustainable almost. I looked after myself quite well, and sort of got on with things, managed to be sort of okay with life and the usual sort of stuff that went on. And when I started using it, it was socially acceptable. It was what you did, young teenagers, and we sort of drinking and smoking and doing whatever we did. But as they progressed, so slowly but surely, that big group of friends that it started out with became smaller and smaller and smaller, and as the drugs became harder and harder. So I, started finding myself on my own on numerous occasions. And by the age of about 23, drugs sort of brought me to my knees for the first time. And, I'd stopped working. I'd sort of lost sight of any ambition that I might have had, or any goals that I might have had early on in life. And all that mattered was, getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. Quite literally. It was a very, very dark and very lonely place. I didn't really know which way to turn. The first person I spoke to about it was my girlfriend, who I had stolen from, continuously lied and cheated. She took me to a drug counselling centre, which was like a drop-in. I couldn't afford to go to a rehab or, because they were sort of private things where I come from. And this drop-in was a place you could go to on a daily basis, and they had things like Reiki and a acupuncture and massage and all sorts of other stuff. And but they had also, you know, workshops where you sat around and sort of spoke about your problem. And I sort of tried that for a bit. And funny enough, on my way out, sort of a week into it, I saw a pamphlet about NA. And I thought I was willing to go to any lengths at the time. And I picked up the pamphlet and I phoned up the number and, you know, somebody told me where to go. There was a meeting that evening and I went to the meeting. I sat right at the back, quite unsure about sort of what it was all about. And, you know, as I said, I was willing to give it a try. At the end of the meeting, I got given a sheet of paper, A4 piece of paper, and there was a list of the meetings that were happening in and around my area. And at the time, there were 7 meetings a week, so a meeting a day. And I kept coming back every day. Finally got to about 90 days clean, and I'd managed to get a job again and got my girlfriend back. You know, I was going to gym every day, you know, got myself a motorbike, and, you know, all the external stuff started sort of coming back. And then I felt good in myself as well, you know, I was looking okay again, and for some reason or another, all those suggestions, all the readings, you know, all the talks, all the shares, all the meetings, for some reason I didn't quite hear what they were saying. And, you know, after getting my 90-day key ring, I stopped going. Slowly but surely, I convinced myself, well, this disease convinced me that I didn't need it any longer, that I was healed, that I was cured. Stopped going. The next 4.5 years of my life were nothing shy of an absolute nightmare. I absolutely slaughtered myself, and by the grace of God, didn't end up dead or in jail or in an institution, but managed to crawl back, you know, on the bones of my ass, to say the least. Luckily, there was a seed that was planted the first time I came around, and at the age of 27, I crawled back to a meeting. At the end of that first meeting, once again, sat at the back of the room, shivering. I picked up another list of where to find as such. There were 56 meetings a week, 4.5 years later. And there were people in that meeting, that very meeting, that were in the very first meeting that I went to when I first came round. And they were now 4 years, 5 years clean. One of them was a very, very, very good friend of mine, a guy that I went to school with, primary school and high school. And the penny sort of dropped then and there that, you know, this works. And perhaps I should give myself a chance. And I kept coming back. Found it incredibly difficult to interact with people. I had no social skills at all. Suggested that I took on a commitment, and started with being a greeter, and then I took on the tea commitment, and that allowed me to at least ask people whether they wanted tea or coffee. Milk, no milk, sugar. That was started off at that level. But you know what? Slowly but surely I got to know their names. Slowly but surely I, you know, went for coffee afterwards as well. You know, and I stuck around. My dad's originally from this country, and I had a British passport through him. And throughout my using, I'd always had this dream of, you know, finally sort of getting a ticket together and coming over to the UK. You know, all my friends had done it every single year. They'd worked throughout the year and saved up enough money to come and enjoy London and check it out. And they'd work here for a while and come back with some pounds and, you know, spend it all on a huge party. That sounded like a good idea, you know, and I never got it together. You know, so many years went by, every single year I spent all that money for that ticket. Finally got that ticket together after getting 6 months clean, and came to London. Got to a meeting pretty quickly, and to find, and there were 250 meetings plus a week in London. I was once again blown away by the sheer enormity of this fellowship, and I got myself to a meeting, and kept going, and started off doing loads and loads of meetings a week, and before long I obviously had to get myself a job. I came over with my girlfriend, my long-term girlfriend, that I met on New Year's Eve 1990. She was on a work visa, she was South African, and within 2 years of us being here, I finally plucked up enough courage to do the right thing and ask her to marry me. In 2000, we got married. Life took off. Things started to happen. I started getting promotion at work, and, we bought our first flat together, and life was okay. And a fair while in, we decided that we were finally going to try and have a baby. And she fell pregnant straight away. And she had what's called an ectopic pregnancy, where she lost the pregnancy and also lost one of her tubes, which was pretty tragic. And it was one of the first times that my recovery was really put to the test. It was a massive emotional thing to deal with, and I found myself almost not emotionally capable of actually dealing with the situation, and it was a tough time. Luckily I had a sponsor at the time that I didn't ring as much as I should have, but at that time I really, really did tap into that resource, and we tried again 6 months later, and exactly the same thing happened again. And she lost the other tube, and we then only had the option to do IVF, and we did IVF treatment. It was a tough time. And we tried, and we tried again, and we tried again, and we tried again. And we're 5 years down the line, and still no joy. And it was really taxing, and my career once again had taken off even more, and life on life terms was full steam ahead. I'd become a productive member of society, only due to this program and being part of it. Unfortunately, I lost sight of the importance of this program along the way, and all of this going on. Her mother passed away as well, her sister passed away shortly after that, from this disease. Funny enough, we were the last people to see her before she died. Stuff started happening, and rather than me getting absolutely in the middle of this program, like it is suggested, and especially during these kind of times, I did completely the opposite. Started going to sort of one meeting a week. Before long, it was one meeting a month, and before long, I stopped going. And old behavior started coming back, and I was 11 and a half years clean, and I picked up. Ripped me to pieces. I couldn't tell my sponsor, I couldn't tell any of my friends that I have a lot of friends in this fellowship. A lot of them are here tonight. I couldn't tell anyone. My pride was just so huge that I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't ask for help. I started coming back to meetings, started going to loads of meetings. I just couldn't get back in the middle because I couldn't accept what had happened. 11 and a half years. And somehow, some way, I got myself to a convention and I heard someone sharing, and I had what they had, what I wanted, and I finally plucked up the courage to go up to them and ask them to be my sponsor. And obviously I had to let go of my other sponsor, who I hadn't told yet, and it was all quite complicated, and I threw myself back into this program headlong, and I absolutely and utterly did everything that had been suggested. And today I live this program, and I put it absolutely first, top of the tree, without a doubt, and I do what's suggested. I'm loving, I do service and I help God's kids, and that's my primary purpose today. You know, and if I don't do that, I haven't got a chance, because this disease will get to me no matter what. But you know what? After the sixth IVF attempt, we fell pregnant, and you know, my son will be 3 years old in November this year. And when we did that, we froze some embryos, and we tried one more time, and in 5 days' time, my daughter will be born. And some more good news, at the end of August, God willing, I celebrated 2 years clean again.
Yay, well done.
And it's only down to all of you and this program that I have in life that I have today, and I cannot stress, you know, how important this program is, you know, to all of us, you know, not just me, because without you, I don't have anything, and thank you very much to all of you for being here and for making this possible. Cheers.